Unlock big savings while adding style and security to your home with Schlage door locks from Menards. High-quality Schlage Wi-Fi compatible entry locks allow you to lock and unlock your home from anywhere with your phone. Get peace of mind and save big money on all door locks at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Coming up on episode 409 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Dodge Charger Daytona, the F-150 Lightning, Genesis GV70, Ford's latest version of Blue Cruise. Hertz is putting in AI scanners to look for damage. The EV tax credits are going away, and buying a used EV. All that and more coming up next. This is Wheel Bearings episode 409. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Telemetry.
I am Nicole Wakeland from U.S. News.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And let's hope that third time's a charm. All right.
Oh, my
gosh. Nicole, what have you been driving?
Yes, sir. I have been driving the 2026 Genesis GV70 3.5 Turbo Sport Prestige all-wheel drive.
Oh, my gosh.
It's kind of, okay, I'm done.
Too much name.
I have a Monroney. I have an official one. Look, it's like
Holy
official.
Cow.
Look at it.
Where'd
and
you
everything.
Get that from?
Yeah. I know. It was like in the car. Go figure. Okay. So,
clearly, the guys who manage your local fleet up there didn't clean out the glove box and forgot to take it out.
Missed cleaning that out, right? Yeah. Right? Exactly. So this isn't all new this year. They would say it's refreshed. So styling gets a little bit of an update, like the grill is a little bit different. There's a new 27-inch screen for nav in the instrument cluster. They do some updates like Nappa leather and stitching. So it's like little updates throughout. There's nothing wow in your face about this, just like mildly updated.
I'd say that screen is kind of wow. Compared to what you had before.
Yeah. That's true. So the screen is the wow. Let's say the screen is the wow. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different trims, 4 of them with the base engine, 2 of them with a 3.5. So you start off at about $48,000. This one is, which I'm driving, is $70,095. So there's a pretty, you know, what is like a $20,000 spread, depending on which one you get. Guys, at destination, place your bets.
$11.95.
$16.95. Oh, now you're gonna do math. Sorry,
Robbie. Yay. I had to do
I'm sorry.
$14.50.
Yay!
So, Robbie, right? I did that math right. Yeah, Robbie's
12,
closer.
You said $16.95.
Yeah.
So, it's almost an exact split between the two. Almost a tie.
Almost.
So, hold on. Let's see. 16.
I know.
If he's taking out a pen and paper, now I don't feel so bad.
So you were off. You were up by 200, and I was off by 300 because you said 1495, right?
Okay. Yes. Oh, 1450.
1450. Oh, well, that might be a different story. I think Robbie's got me by a couple of bucks. So
$245.
Yeah, barely. So my instinct was correct. I'm like, wait, Robbie's going to end up being closer. So. Robbie wins. We're just going to say Robbie. Sam, you can keep crunching numbers. We're going to say Robbie.
Robbie won by $10.
$10.
I was off
well
by $255. Robbie was off by $245.
There we go. So the base engine is a 2.5-liter turbo that has 300 horsepower. The one that I have was a 3.5, which is a twin turbo V6. It gets 375 horsepower, so it's a pretty big jump there. Also, the torque goes up from 311 to 391. So you definitely get a more responsive ride if you go with this, the more expensive trim. But the cheapest this comes is on the Sport Advance, which is $63,000. So you're not, you can't get a cheap version of this one. So you got to have the extra cash. It's a two-row SUV, good amount of cargo room. There is 28.9 cubic feet behind that second row. So that's not too bad for a little two-row SUV. I like the inside of it. I generally speaking, I like Genesis. I think Genesis. They look, they, you know, the price, this isn't cheap. Not, I mean, with everything on here, $72,225 is the one I'm driving. So it's definitely not a cheap vehicle, but I feel like you get inside and you would think it was more. Like they do a very good job of making it look a little bit more than what you spent. And you definitely feel like it's a premium vehicle. Mine had this beautiful, like, accent suite. I'm trying to see if they list the color on here. There were orange, I'm just going to call it orange. I don't know if they just call it that, but there were orange seatbelts and there's orange contrast stitching on various spots on this very light interior.
Would that,
so it really
pops.
Would that
be like magma orange?
You know, I want them to call it magma orange, and I can't find, the color is not officially listed anywhere on my Monroney, which is unusual. Normally it gives you a color, but it does not. And doesn't say anything about that. So, but it is like this, we're going to go magma. I'm going to call it magma orange because that makes sense. So that nice little pop of magma looks fantastic. It's very fun to drive. It's got plenty of power. You know, you hit the gas pedal and it's going to move. And it's surprisingly sporty, and it has the bolsters that can, adaptive bolsters. Is that, I'm forgetting the term, when they move as you drive, if you're driving faster and you take corners and they squish you to hold you in the seat, it's like a little hug. I think it was a little like, you're driving too fast hug. Whoop, we're holding you in. So those are always kind of fun. I think you either love those or hate those. You either think it's really neat that it helps keep you centered in your seat, or you're like, leave me alone, seat. Just sit there and do your thing. Leave me alone. But I love it. I thought it was great. So I really enjoy driving this. I think for, you know, if you're looking for that premium SUV with a lot of style, and honestly, when you're spending at this price point, it's partly what the vehicle does. Does it have the power and the features and the things you want? But it's a large part of it is style. You're buying because you like how it looks. You like how it feels. You like how it makes you feel when you see it. You know, it's a premium SUV. And I think for Genesis, it's still a brand that's still relatively unrecognized. I mean, they're doing great. They're not an unknown, but everybody under the sun is going to know who BMW is. Everybody's going to know who Audi is. There are a lot of people you're going to say Genesis to, and they're still going to think it's a Hyundai Genesis. They're not going to realize that it's own brand. So you have to have you're sort of buying something that's less common to see. And also, you know, not everybody's going to know that you're driving a luxury vehicle. So if you're trying to announce that to the world by driving something like a BMW or an Audi simply because you're impressed with the badge, you're not going to do it in a Genesis. If you want to have all of that for less price and much of the same quality and drive experience, then good for you for using your brain and getting a Genesis instead, because you get all the flash, all the fun of it, but you just don't pay quite the premium. So I love this car. I think it's fantastic. I like how it looks sitting in the driveway. It's very cute. It's fun. And yeah, I'm a fan. I like this one. It is premium, but still, like I said, you're paying a premium for this vehicle, but not as high as you would pay with some other badges, which is part of what the big appeal to me is for Genesis.
Yeah. I mean, I like the GV70. I would be really appreciative if Genesis would consider selling the G70 shooting brake here, you know, which is very similar, but, you know, a little
don't
bit lower.
Hold your breath, Sam. You
know,
I
know Americans can't have nice things because we refuse to buy station wagons.
Correct.
But the G70 shooting brake, you know, would be my preference. But in lieu of that, you know, this is not bad. And I'm looking at this and it does definitely look like magma orange.
It does. Doesn't it? I would, you said that. Yeah, right. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's got to be magma. And, you know, I don't think Genesis would be too upset if we called it magma.
No, and they're not going to be mad. It's not like we're coming up with some horrible name.
Yeah.
You're using the magma thing. So,
I mean, it's a brand that Genesis is trying to build as their performance brand. So Yeah. No, I like it. I'm a fan of this platform.
Yeah, I think it's quite good. So I'm a fan. But you know, there's rarely a time when I'm not a Genesis fan. I generally do like their vehicles. I'm trying to think if there's one truly where I've looked at it and been like, yeah, no, that's garbage. Like, I generally like them.
Yeah, it's, and you know, it's 70,000. You know, it's not cheap, but when you compare it to BMW, Mercedes-Benz, even Lexus, you know, for something comparable to this, you know, I mean, it would be something like probably like a high-end X3 from BMW, mm-hmm. or a GLC. You know, that price is probably, you know, I think it's pretty competitive.
Exactly. That's the thing. It really is well-priced. Hyundai does that with their vehicles. So does Genesis with their more premium vehicles. So it is very competitive. I still feel like you get a lot of car in Genesis for the dollar, a lot of car.
Let's see. Yeah. GLC starts at 50 grand. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you compare something, scrolling. Yeah. Have you ever had problems with the Mercedes website in Chrome? Where sometimes it just won't scroll.
I have problems with Mercedes everything. I always have problems with the Mercedes.
Well, anyway, I think it's a pretty competitive car, and it's really good. All right.
I am pro Genesis, and I am very pro GV70.
All right, Mr. Baldwin, what about you?
I drove the Ford F-150. Lightning platinum.
Now we're talking expensive.
Platinum. yeah, I drove that. It's 2025. 4x4 Super Crew, 131 kilowatt hour battery pack. So yeah, all the bells and whistles and bits and bobs and all that jazz. To be honest, I really like the F-150 Lightning a lot. Except for the fact you can't see at the front of it. It's
yeah,
too
but that's
big.
A truck thing. That's not a lightning.
That's not a lightning thing. That's just an American truck thing. Good job, America. That said, this is the fancy one. I don't care about the fancy bits, to be honest. I don't need a truck that's also a luxury vehicle. I need a truck that's a truck. I need a truck that I can put my dogs in. I need a truck that I can just throw junk in and not worry about. Oh, because some of the interior was white, which is saying some of the interior is eventual gray. Because
eventual gray.
It's actually eventually
splotchy gray.
Yeah. I like that expression. The interior is eventual gray.
So it says interior, black interior with leather, but it's like the middle part is white. And I was just like, So whenever I went and did try to truck things with it, I have a giant drop cloth. I have a bunch of giant drop cloths for painting and whatnot. And one of them isn't for painting, it's for other stuff. And I would put it in the back of the truck so I could get things and put them in the back of the truck, which is the exact opposite of why you get a truck. So I don't want to get the back of my truck all dirty. Yeah.
What about the frunk? Did you try using the frunk?
Oh, I did use the frunk, but some things had, you know, you had to put in the back. I did use this to take all the gear. I took drums, percussion, and then my guitar amp and everything for a wedding. So we did a wedding. One of my bands did a wedding, and we threw everything in the back of the truck and in the frunk and in the back, and we still had tons of room, and we could have taken almost the whole band with us if we really wanted to. So that's nice. That said, everything, what's really nice, especially when I was showing this truck to like my uncle who used to own an auto repair shop. He's retired now. And he was very impressed. He's like, wow, this truck is really nice. I'm like, yeah, you can plug this in. You know, you can just plug things in. And then you can plug your phone in. It has all this stuff. And I like the fact that Ford really thought about all the little truck working bits, you know, the center console will fold flat so you can eat a burrito, or if you're Nicole, a pile of cookies,
or pie.
You can do work, you can plug everything you've ever owned in. I don't know what I plugged something into the it doesn't matter. I think I had to charge like a camera or in-ear system. I don't remember what I was charging, but you can charge things with it while you're driving around. It's camera batteries. That's what it was, for lights. And so, yeah, no. So everything, all that sort of that thought process of creating a vehicle that works really well as a work vehicle, I would like them to shrink it all down to like the size of a Maverick, which apparently they're doing. Maybe, who knows? It's Ford.
There's a midsize electric truck coming end of next year, early 2027. So that's going to be probably more Ranger size than Maverick size.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I would like a smaller version of this vehicle. I think it's, I still think the F-150 Lightning is the best F-150 for like 80% of the people who buy a truck. I think a lot of people are not doing a lot of towing. I think a lot of people are not hauling a lot of stuff. I think a lot of people, and if you are hauling stuff, that's really towing, because I just threw all the stuff I needed in the back and it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. For range, you know, it just doesn't matter. It did have Blue Cruise, which seems to be working better. Still, I don't know what to do with my hands, so I just leave them on the wheel. There you go. That's Super Cruise, Blue Cruise. Like, what do I do with my hands? I'm Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with them. So I just leave them on the wheel. It seemed to be doing better. The highways around my house are pretty windy. So they're, you know, it's still like, in some cases, like, whoa, buddy. Hey, let's center it up a little bit more. But I think all the systems pretty much have that problem. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to try that one corner that all of them apparently fail when you're coming off the Bay Bridge and you're going on the 80. There's like a left turn that they all are like, oh, so I didn't have a chance to do that. This vehicle had 303 miles of range. That sounds about right. I ended up having to do a lot of stuff with the truck. It did a good job of charging and discharging and whatever. This was the truck though that had the weird problem with the massage seats that I talked about last week. Mm-hmm.
Where it got stuck, you got like stuck, in the wrong,
so you're like, stabbed. So you're getting stabbed in the ass. so you kind of have to like push it down with your butt. You're like, ah. So
did you actually, is that what you did? Did you just like force it down?
Yeah.
Like with a butt cheek?
My buns of steel pushed it down. You're not the boss of me, vehicle. That's it. Yeah. I, you know, again, if, you know, electric trucks, I had the Silverado, which I think is nice, but I think the F-150 is a better truck, to be honest. The Lightning, if you want a billion miles of range, because the battery is the size of everything you've ever owned, yeah, then the Silverado's the vehicle. I think Ford was smarter with a truck that's essentially exactly like the gas vehicle. So I see these around more and more here in the Bay Area, and they're being used by people who just like took the cage off their F-150 gas and just blonk, plopped it on their F-150 Lightning. So yeah, no, I really I like the vehicle. Again, definitely too big for me. Definitely an issue with all truck manufacturers in the United States not really caring about what's happening in front of their vehicles, because they want to all recreate that F-150, the Ford Raptor from years ago, when everyone's like, oh, that's cool that you can't see out of it, but you have a giant Ford written across the front. So I'm still not a fan of that. It's quick, which really, again, trucks don't need to be quick. They just need to haul things. We're not dragon racing trucks, people. And you definitely should not be drag racing your truck, because it's a giant mass of everything. Comfortable front seats, back seats, tons of leg room, tons of storage space, tons of places to put your burritos. You have to be careful with when you have these trucks, because when you the center console, you open it up and it's just a cavern, because there's no you don't have to worry about the drive shaft going through or the transmission, and so it's just a cavern. So you could put things in there and then just forget them, like a child or a puppy or, you know, some food or something. So just be careful with that giant cavernous hole that you can put things in. The frunk is great. Got a lot of stuff in the frunk. Got a lot, you know, bunch of band stuff, things that you don't kind of don't want to leave in the back of the truck when you're traveling around, all the expensive bits. Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know, the fifth, eighth, 12th time I've driven the F-150 Lightning. They just keep giving it to me. I just keep taking it. That sounds inappropriate.
Did you hook up a welder and do some welding?
I didn't really have any use for welding while I was, I did hook up some lights to it for photos. So I got that going for me. here's a fun little story. So me and the drummer are driving to this wedding. And when you do a wedding, you usually have to be there really, really early because you want to set up everything before the guests get there, especially at the wedding and the reception at the same location. That was the case. There was a wind advisory. It's really windy here during the summer, and which is how we end up with fires. And so they said, oh, we're going to turn off power in certain areas. So I was like, oh no, that's going to be so sad if the power gets shut off this people's place. And then I remembered I'm driving the F-150 Lightning, and I was trying to figure out, I'm like, oh, do I have enough power?
Am I in trouble?
I could definitely run all of the band stuff, but could I run the PA? So the PA draws a lot of power because taking, you know, all the music, it's running it through this, and, you know, the drums are hooked up to, you know, mic'd through it, guitar, everything. And it's not the high end that's a problem. It's all the low end. So bass pulls a lot of power. In the 80s and 90s, you would see cars with huge bass setups where the headlights would dim because it's pulling so much power from the car.
No way. I never knew that. Okay.
So, but I'm pretty sure we could have pulled it off. So I was like, I get to be a hero if everything goes sideways. So the F-150 Lightning, if you could see out of it better, it'd be great. And if you happen to be a band that's playing a wedding and the power goes out, you get to be a hero.
Absolutely.
Oh, let's see. Destination charge. What do you guys think?
$21.95.
Nicole gets it dead on.
Oh, is it really? Oh.
2000.
Dead on?
Dead on.
Wait, did you just say I got it? Wow.
$2,095. It's really heavy. It's a heavy. It's a heavy.
Yeah, I mean, all the full-size trucks are over $2,000 now for shipping.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It had the bed. Of all the things that let's see what they had. Spare tire. Yeah, that's cool. They had the Blue Cruise equipment, one-year plan, which is like, hey, we're just going to give you that for free. And then after that, they charge you a monthly. They had a mobile power cord, which was $600, I guess, to plug in your car. But the bed liner spray, that's the only thing you need to get for a truck, to be honest.
Yeah.
You buy a truck, get the bed liner spray. The end.
That's it. Nothing else.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're going to buy a Lightning, you know, just get the Lightning Pro, you know, cloth seats and everything. And
yeah.
You'll be happy.
You will be happy. I don't, you know, all this. The very fancy bits, I was just like, okay.
If you got dogs, or you know, if you live, you don't want white seats in your car.
Oh yeah, gosh, no, mm-hmm. No. That's I don't understand. I kind of understand why people are like, oh, I want to get a truck, but I want to be as comfortable as if I were driving a Lincoln Continental. But that is definitely not me. I mean, if that's you, fine. I still am very pro trucks or trucks, and you do truck things with them. You don't drive around and feel fancy.
You have to haul mulch and do truck stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to fill it full of rocks and mulch and sticks and wood and trash and lumber and cattle, and motorcycles.
Build fences and, you know.
Build fences.
Raised beds.
My high school, we had a truck, and it was one of the first trucks with that extra, with that Super Crew cab. And I remember thinking, this truck is so huge. And that's the truck I learned how to drive a trailer in. But it also had the full size bed. It doesn't have like the short bed that everyone has anymore. So it was huge. It was huge.
And then you threw it. Cab.
Yeah, it was pretty enormous. And then, you know, and then we stuck a big animal trailer on the back and hauled around horses and pigs and sheep, occasionally a cow. Fox. Filled it with hay.
Unlock big savings while adding style and security to your home with Schlage door locks from Menards. High-quality Schlage Wi-Fi compatible entry locks allow you to lock and unlock your home from anywhere with your phone. Get peace of mind and save big money on all door locks at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. Well, I also had had a couple of EVs this week. Actually, three technically, which I'll get to the third one in a few minutes. But the main one that I was driving this week was the Dodge Charger Daytona Scat Pack Stage 2, which is a very controversial car. It is, in the words of Tim Kaniskis, the first American e-muscle car.
Sure, Tim. And, whatever you say.
You know, I mean, when you think of the characteristics of a classic muscle car, you know, it's a car with lots of power, maybe so-so handling, comfortable to drive, lots of room inside, and makes lots of noise. The Charger Daytona does all that.
All right, I'll give him that.
You know. It can accelerate really fast. It's got okay handling, you know, not great, you know, because it weighs 6,000 pounds. It's a big car, you know. The standard Charger Daytona configuration now is 3 inches wider than the old wide body Charger, the previous generation wide body, and it's like 6 inches longer than the old one. So this is a big car. And last Saturday morning, I took it to go to Cars and Coffee in Ooh. Birmingham, and you know, driving this thing down the freeway, this was like driving a classic American big sedan. Very roomy, very comfortable, fairly quiet. You know, just cruising down the mm-hmm. highway. The dogs were happy in the back seat. They had plenty of room back there. So this is a great cruiser. And it's a good muscle car too. I mean, it'll smoke the tires if you turn on all the modes and put it in drag mode and give it the boost and everything. It can get very, very loud. Or it can get very quiet. Maybe too quiet, but we'll get to that later too. It's funny on a Saturday afternoon, my wife and I went to the lake, loaded up the back. You know, one of the things when they did the background on this last year before they revealed it all publicly, they talked about how because it's a hatchback, you know, so it's shaped like a big coupe, American coupe sedan. But it's a hatchback, you know, so the rear glass opens up with the trunk lid, which addresses one of the problems with the old Charger, because the old Charger had a reasonably sized trunk, but the way the car was shaped, the trunk lid was kind of small. And so like for when they used them for police cars, police, you know, liked the performance of the Charger, but they didn't like the fact that getting their gear in and out of the trunk was a kind of a pain. So this one's got a hatchback. So you got a nice big opening, the rear seats fold down, and, you know, Dodge talked about how you could, you know, if you're going to take this thing to a track day, not sure why you would want to take this to a track day, maybe to a drag strip, take it to a drag strip. But, you know, for a track day, you can fold the back seats down and you can put a full set of wheels and tires and your jack and everything in the back. And, you know, we loaded up, you know, a couple of beach chairs, you know, bag of towels, paddleboard. It passed the paddleboard test. All that fits in the trunk, even with the seats up in, you know, in the usable position. So, you know, lots of cargo space in this thing. It's a very usable, aside from its sheer physical size, fairly practical car. The back seat is very roomy and comfortable. The back seat is very large. Adults can fit in the back seat very comfortably with lots of leg and headroom. Not a problem at all. You know, it looks great. When I was at Cars and Coffee, I ran into Joel Piaskowski, who's I think he's a designer at Ford. I think he's currently head of truck design for Ford. You know, and he was taking a look at it and admiring it. You know, his one complaint about it was, you know, right now they're still only building the two door. They've got a four door coming. He thought the proportion, because of the length of the doors, he thought the proportion of the doors was a little bit off and looked better as a four door with the B pillar a little bit further forward.
No,
I don't entirely agree with that.
You know,
everybody else was admiring
it. I like the way this. I saw an orange one. Someone around here in my hood owns an orange one, and I like it.
Yeah,
no, I think it's ridiculous, but it's exactly what it's supposed to be. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good job.
but when my wife and I were coming back from the lake, we stopped off at this bakery in Dexter, Michigan, to get some pizza. They make an amazing. If you're ever in Dexter, Michigan, go to Raderman's. Bakehouse. They do sourdough breads, and they make amazing sourdough crust pizzas. Really fantastic stuff. Anyway, as we were leaving, I decided to I fired it up and put it in track mode, so it was like really loud, and just accelerated mildly out of the parking area. And it's like everybody's looking over, checking this thing out, saying, "What the hell is that?" So that was good fun. You know, when I was driving on the highway, this thing was surprisingly efficient. You know, driving to Cars and Coffee, it got 3 miles per kilowatt hour, which, you know, for a 3-ton car with, you know, 640-ish horsepower, that's not too shabby at all.
I really like the idea of like every mile is like a multiple of 10 for gas. So 3 miles per kilowatt hour is like 30 miles per gallon. That's an easy way for people to sort of transfer from one powertrain to another. So,
yeah. And, you know, and then, you know, if you turn on all these modes and, you know, play with it and do muscle car things with it, you know, obviously you're going to get substantially less than that. You know, probably in the, you know, 1.5 to 2 miles per kilowatt hour range. but still not bad. The one I had was finished in, the After Dark, which is like this dark blue with, you know, a hint of green in it, you know, almost like a really dark turquoise. And it had, had the stripes over the top, which had the Fratzog logo in the stripes, which added a cool extra touch, and the stripes extend right up over the glass roof. So when you're sitting inside, you look up and you see these two stripes with the Fratzog.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Fun
little details. So I really enjoyed driving this car, aside from its sheer physical size. You know, when I pulled into the
place, very big.
Yeah. The place where
you could land planes on the hood.
Yeah.
Helicopters are hovering over it. Like, this is where we'd land, right?
Yeah. The place where I went for Cars and Coffee, they have a relatively small parking area. And I pulled in on one side, and you know, then somebody else came up behind me in an old Corvette. And so I, you know, he couldn't quite squeeze in. And so I had to back up a little bit and move over a few inches, you know, to give him enough room to pull the car in. But other than that, you know, I did enjoy driving it. You know, this is not cool. A sports car that's, you know, it doesn't have handling like a Miata or anything like that. But you know, it's got big old tires on it, and you know, it can generate some serious grip. It's quick. It'll do 0 to 60 in like 3.4 seconds. The one that I drove as equipped, base price was for the Scat Pack is $64,995 with the assorted options that were on here, including the Stage 2 package, which adds 80 horsepower to it. That's $3,200. The Sun and Sound package with the glass roof is another $2,500. That also adds the Alpine 18 speaker audio system. And then the Track package is another $5,000. That gives you big Brembo brakes, performance seats, ventilated front seats, a whole bunch of other stuff there. So grand total came to $80,220. Guesses on the destination?
Stellantis, $1,200.
$1,495.
Nicole gets it, but she was still way off. $1,995.
Jeez. Oh, geez. I got wait, I got both of them this week?
You're a winner.
That never happens. I'm going to go play the lottery.
$80,000 is a lot of money, but keep in mind that this is a car that is quicker than the old Hellcat, actually quicker than the old Charger Redeye. So it'll accelerate faster than the old Charger Redeye, which costs like $93,000-$94,000. And because these aren't selling at a breakneck pace, a lot of dealers are giving crazy discounts on them. So there's like people are throwing $15,000 on the hood on these things.
Yeah.
You can actually get one of these for, you know, like $60,000 to $65,000, which, you know, again, still a lot of money, but a lot for the performance that this thing offers, you know, and what it is, a big, comfortable, classic American cruiser. It's not bad. You know, it's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
The EVs are perfect muscle cars because you could just like throw big things in it, and muscle cars just point in one direction, go fast. That's their job. Yeah. Where do you want to go? I want to go in a straight line from here to there as fast as possible. And that's EVs are great for that. That said, I mean, it's like EVs are great for trucks because they have a lot of torque, but the people who buy trucks and who buy muscle cars still want. Vroom, vroom.
Well, that's what the Fratsonic chambered exhaust is for.
What do they want, Robbie?
They want.
Okay, just clarifying. Okay, I'm gonna make sure I got that. Right.
All my neighbors came over to check out the Fratsonic exhaust, you know, and they wanted to hear it revving. So, you know, had to demonstrate that on more than a few occasions. There is a stealth mode, which basically turns off almost everything. The only thing that is remains when you put it in stealth mode is the mandatory low speed sound that all EVs and hybrids are supposed to make below 20 miles an hour. One of the stories on the rundown today, though, is apparently there's a recall on the Charger Daytonas because NHTSA found that the sound that the Charger Daytona makes when it's in stealth mode, actually a little bit too quiet.
It's too stealthy.
Yeah, it's not quite loud enough. So they have to do a software update on those to make them slightly louder.
That's fine.
That's kind of funny. Yeah. Of all things, it's too quiet.
Yeah. Fix it. They can fix it. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
No, that's an easy fix.
Yeah. Definitely an easy one. Yeah. All right. So that is the Charger Daytona Scat Pack.
We're still just using Scat Pack, right? It's just poop in a bag. That's a Scat Pack.
Pretty much. that is the literal meaning. Yes.
Scat Pack. We're just not going away from. Okay.
You have to
come from? Does anybody know how we got that?
It dates back to like the late 60s on the original Chargers.
It turns out that that hunters and muscle car people are not the same people.
Yeah, Scat Pack was something they had on the on the Chargers back in the 60s.
So my AI, when I Googled, said it's because scat likes scat, like skedaddle, like go fast, get out of the way. And pack is supposed to reference the Rat Pack, which was a big deal at the time. Frank Sinatra and the crew.
Oh, so it was a pun.
It was, So the Scat Pack is a clever twist on the famous Rat Pack.
Which doesn't make any sense because I don't see Frank Sinatra or any of those guys. Like,
you don't automatically get in a car.
I don't think muscle car. I think big
That's
cruiser.
What, it gives
big,
me a length. This
big Cadillac Coupe de Ville or something.
And everyone is drunk. Like absolutely everyone in the car is drunk. But charming.
I don't, I never, once I ask myself the question, I'm like, I have to Google and find out. So there you go. There's your trivia. That's it's named after the Rat Pack.
Scat Pack or Rat Pack. All right. So the other car that I had in the driveway, while I had the Charger, Ford sent over, a Mustang Mach-E Rally, a 2025 Mach-E Rally. Cause they did a little drive program here the week before. When I was out of town, so I couldn't go to it. So they sent one over on Monday for me to drive because for 2025, the Mach-E is the first model to get Blue Cruise 1.5, which is a further upgraded version of what was in the Lightning. I think the Lightning still has 1.3 on it. I don't think it even has 1.4 yet. So when I drove the Navigator a few weeks back, you know, I took that one and drove it on some of the roads where I've previously had issues with Blue Cruise disengaging on certain curves. And the Navigator worked fine on those now. I took the Mach-E out. It still works fine on there. The big change for going from version 1.4 that's on Navigator and Expedition to 1.5 is it now does automatic overtaking, automatic lane changes. So since, I can't remember if it was 1.2 or 1.3, they've had, you could do lane change on demand. So if you just tap the turn signal, the Blue Cruise would change lanes over to the, you know, assuming it was all clear, change lanes over to the lane to your left, and then tap it the other way to go back. Now, like Super Cruise, it can do that automatically if you allow it. You can also, you know, if it'll indicate before it does a lane change, says, hey, preparing to do lane change. And if you don't want it to change lanes, if you want to stay in the lane you're in, because you're maybe going to be getting off the exit shortly, you can just tap the turn signal stock and it'll cancel it.
You know, on the F-150 Lightning, he's like, hey, you could do a lane change here. They kept wanting me to go into the carpool lane, which it doesn't have a sticker on it, so I can't. And there wasn't enough people in the car to go into carpool lane. I'm like, stop trying to get me a ticket, Ford.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, Blue Cruise still has issues with stuff like carpool lanes, because when I drove the Navigator in California during the drive program earlier this year, you know, we were in the carpool lane and Blue Cruise kept disengaging because it was getting confused by all the extra markings on the
all
carpool
the extra
lane
stuff. Yeah,
it didn't it didn't understand where it was driving. So, you know, it'll tell you to go in the carpool lane, but then once it gets there, it says, well, what do I do now?
Which is weird, because if you buy an EV in California, at least for a few more months, years, I don't know, they changed it. You can just drive in the carpool lane by yourself, which for years I've always been like, I don't know if that's like, I mean, it's great to get adoption, but also, I mean, and we didn't even put it on our last EV, but we have it on this EV and I use it all the time. So I am a giant hypocrite.
Well, anyway, on Thursday, my wife and I had to drive down to Lima, Ohio, which is about 2 hours south of us here where we are in Michigan. And normally I would never even think about driving to Lima, Ohio. But we went there to,
that's mean. Ohio, Lima, Ohio is like, well, but why?
Well, there was a car dealer there that had a car we wanted to buy.
Okay.
So we were driving down to Lima. So it was about a 2 hour drive each way. And so I used that opportunity to do some testing of the Blue Cruise. I can definitely say that the overall performance of Blue Cruise 1.5 is vastly better than the last Mach-E that I had with Blue Cruise, probably comparable to the 1.4 that I tried in the Navigator, in terms of its just overall lane holding ability, staying engaged through curves and things like that. It's definitely made huge progress since the original version of Blue Cruise, which frankly were kind of disappointing. So, you know, now it stays engaged going through pretty much every curve. I didn't encounter any curves where it disengaged on me. It stays nicely centered in the lane. When it's passing a truck, it will nudge over to the other side of the lane away from the truck, still staying in the lane, but just kind of giving you a few extra inches of clearance just in case the truck starts to sway a little bit. And I let it do automatic lane changes, and it worked really well. It would check, you know, make sure there was sufficiently clear. It would give me an alert saying, "Hey, I'm going to do a lane change." And if I didn't tap the turn signal stock, it would just go ahead, do the lane change, very smooth, no jerking around. It was, it didn't feel overly aggressive. In fact, in some ways it felt a little conservative, not so much in terms of the smoothness of how it executes the lane change, but if there was a number of vehicles coming up in the left lane, even if there was more than sufficient gap between the vehicles, if I was driving manually, I would have been very comfortable switching into that lane. There was more than enough room between them. The Blue Cruise, said, I'm just going to let them keep going until it's like truly clear. But I think for an automated system like that, I'm okay with it being on the more conservative side like that. It doesn't have to be super aggressive. In fact, I probably don't mm-hmm. want it to be super aggressive. So I think that worked really well. So I was generally pretty pleased with the way Blue Cruise worked over 4 hours of driving down to Ohio and back.
So did it feel, would you say it was dramatically different?
Compared to Blue Cruise 1.2, which was on the last Mach-E that I drove like a year or so ago, year and a half ago. It was absolutely way better than that. Compared to 1.4 that's on the Navigator, not a dramatic difference. The main difference being that it now does the lane changes automatically instead of you having to initiate the lane changes.
Right. Which is a big difference. I think that when you have that, it makes it feel more, like when you have to pay attention enough to change lane, suddenly you realize I'm putzing along behind a slow guy and you're like, I got to do that. When it's just like, hey, slow guy, and does it for you. I like that.
Yeah. Some of the other complaints I've had about Blue Cruise, around the human machine interface, the HMI, are still there. They still don't have capacitive sensors in the steering wheel to detect when your hands are actually on the wheel. So you still get some false positives if you're driving on a straight highway, and you don't need to actually move the wheel around. If you're just cruising down the road, it will occasionally give you false positives to put your hands on the wheel. That's still not great. And, it's still a predominantly blue interface. They have changed around the graphics a little bit, so it's a little more obvious, and they do more with audible alerts when it, if it detects that you're not watching the road, giving you an audible alert. I still like GM's approach of using a haptic seat better for that. And the light bar, and also the capacitive sensors. But, hopefully on next generation vehicles, when they redesign the vehicles, Ford has heard my complaints on this topic many, many times.
And Ford is tired of taking Sam's phone calls.
Sometimes they are.
This guy again.
But and then, this was a Mach-E rally that I was driving. Cruising, at highway speeds, efficiency was not spectacular compared to the Charger. In fact, it was kind of disappointing. The Charger has a lot more power, although the Charger is lower. overall frontal area, because the Charger's so wide, probably similar. And Charger also has much bigger tires than the Mach-E. So the Mach-E Rally averaged about 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour, driving down to Lima and back. So that was not spectacular. But other than that, you know, it's everything else, you know, that we've, come to know and like or hate about the Mach-E over the last several years, is still there. You know, the car hasn't really changed since it was launched in 2021. Which for the most part is fine. I still like the Mach-E. And I think, you know, the Rally looks pretty cool with those white, turbofan wheels, you know, kind of reminiscent of 1980s, early 90s Rally cars, and that big wing on the back. I think it still looks pretty cool, but, it's, you know, in that form, it's not as efficient as I would like it to be.
Fair. I haven't driven that in forever. I feel like I've only driven the Mach-E maybe once, twice, the whole time it's been out.
Huh. I can't remember how many times I've driven it. It's not huge, but it's not more. It's more than three.
Yeah. I've probably driven it about 5 or 6 times now at various times.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, between
I would love to get my hands on it because I feel like it's been a while. In fact, I was writing something up the other day and they wanted me to use the Mach-E as a comparison vehicle. And my brain's like, wait, think back, like trying to remember what I thought about it because it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of media drives for the original one and then the GT and then, press loans at various other times over the last actually almost 4 years now since it came out.
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah. One other thing I forgot to mention about the Charger. I decided to go ahead and try the Electron Vortex NACS adapter at my local supercharger station.
Ooh, how'd that go? I'm curious.
Worked fine. And in fact, yeah. Because the charge port on the Charger is on the left rear fender. You don't have to take up an extra stall at a supercharger station, so you can park in the right place. But the charge port, because the car is so big and the charge port is fairly far forward, you do have to pull back pretty much as far as you can without running over the charging dispensers, in order for the version 3 cables to reach. But I was able to do that, and reach, it worked fine, worked great. When I pulled in, I was at about 40% charge. It jumped up briefly to about 200 kilowatts, and then started ramping down. And, once it was, to about 50% charge, it was down around 130 kilowatts. So that is one thing about the Charger, it doesn't, and I've heard this from others that have done charging tests with it. It's doesn't have the greatest charging curve in the world. It's not like a Hyundai or Kia.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we should talk about why I drove to Lima.
Why did you drive to Lima?
Maybe we should. Tell us why you drove to Lima, which I want to call Lima. It's really Lima, L-I-M-A,
that's
Lima.
That's the way they pronounce it.
Like the bean. I want to make it like Peru, I guess. Isn't Lima
it
in Peru?
Lima is in Peru. Lima is in Ohio.
I want to make it like Peru, not like a bean.
Yeah. So reason my wife
where
and
you
I,
bean?
Oh, we drove to Ohio was to buy a car. So we are now EV owners.
Woohoo!
Join the club.
Welcome.
Join in the club.
We've been talking about replacing our 8-year-old Honda Civic with an EV. And my wife decided, maybe now's a good time to do that. So I went on Auto Trader and started looking around, as I do occasionally. And sure enough, there was a yacht blue 2023 Kia EV6 with like 18,700 miles on it for $24,000.
That's a steal.
That is a steal.
Yeah. You got a good deal, my friend.
Yeah, and that's several thousand dollars less than, the typical price for that configuration. That's for the Wind trim, which is kind of the mid-level trim for the EV6, with the big battery, the 77.5 kilowatt hour battery. And this was rear-wheel drive. Usually a car like that with that kind of mileage is going for about $28,000, $29,000. the reason why the one that we got was 24 was because it, you know, I started checking into it. Turns out it was a buyback, a lemon buyback that Kia repurchased from the original customer in Florida. It was one of the cars. Some of the EGMP cars have had issues with charging the 12-volt battery. And the problem is related to the integrated charge control unit, the ICCU. And they have a recall on this component. So the ICCU handles charging the 12-volt battery, also doing the charging, you know, doing the DC to DC conversion from the high-voltage battery to the 12-volt. So it charges the big battery, the 12-volt, and does some other stuff. And also handles the vehicle to load stuff to plug things into your car to power them. And so I reached out to our friends at Kia and gave them the VIN number and said, hey, can you connect me to somebody in customer service who can tell me, you know, if this has been corrected on this car? And they verified that, yep, the ICCU had been replaced on this car after they did the buyback. Everything should be good. Since this thing has a 5-year, 60,000 mile warranty on it and a 10-year, 100,000 mile battery warranty on it and powertrain warranty on it, figured for 24 grand, what do we got to lose?
Do it.
And so we did it.
Nice. Yeah.
And
so how long have you had it? You just got it this week, right?
We got it on Thursday. It's now Sunday as we're recording this. So like 3 days, 4 days.
Okay, so you've only had a very, very small time with it.
You know,
okay.
My wife, you know, got to, you know, she drove it home, you know, a couple of hours from Lima back to Ypsilanti, and she loves it. She thinks it's
good.
She's very, very happy with this car.
Like,
I love the color you picked too. What the yacht blue or not?
It's a great
it's
color.
A beautiful, vibrant color. Yeah,
very bold. Yeah. You know, darker blue. They don't have that color on the 2025s. They have a lighter blue color. Which is also still a pretty cool looking color, but I really like the yacht blue. I think it's a great looking color.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous color. Congratulations on the new car.
And it will fit a stand up paddleboard in the back, along with a couple of beach chairs and, you know, all the other usual
and puppers
stuff that we take and pups. Yeah, and so lots of room inside. So
there's so much room inside those cars.
Yeah,
it's a trick because I've told people
it's a trick.
It is a trick. It's
the TARDIS.
It's because if people look at it, they look at the photos of the vehicles and they look smaller than they are just because the wheels are so far out. So they think that these are really small cars. They're not.
No.
They're just really big wagons and hatchbacks.
Yeah. My wife was commenting the other day when she was looking at it and said, wow, these wheels are so much larger than the wheels on the Civic because they're 19s as opposed to the 17s we had on the Civic. And, you know, when you're standing next to them, you realize it's only 2 inches, but it makes a big difference.
They're very big. There's a lot of room inside to put all your junk.
Yeah. So we're really enjoying it. And if you're looking for, you know, if you're interested in buying an EV and you're maybe, you know, can't afford the price of a new one, consider buying a lightly used EV because you can get some amazing deals out there. My next door neighbor right now is looking, this is our neighbor that has a Maverick. They're looking at maybe picking up a used Bolt and you can get those, like a 22 or even a 23 model year Bolt for like between $15,000 and $18,000.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's a car that'll give you 250, 260 miles of range with no problem at all. The EV6 we got is the rear drive, so it's got 310 miles of range, and it still charges crazy fast on a DC charger. So,
yeah, it's bad enough. It's the prices are so low that when our lease is up on our Ioniq 5, I don't know if we should buy that Ioniq 5 because the cost, I think, post lease is like $38,000 or $36,000. But we could probably pick up that car for less at the same dealership.
Wait for it to go through auction and
probably get a used one at the same dealership for less. So it's one of those things where like, okay, what do you guys want us to do? Do you want us to You want to match that price and then just be done with it? Or do you want us to walk away from this car and go and just buy this car? So we'll see.
Yeah.
And you should do all this before September, by the way, if you're looking for leases.
Yeah. So let's jump right into that story. Congress passed the budget bill this week, and the president signed it. So the tax credits on new and used EVs are going away September 30th of this year instead of in 2032, like they were originally planned to. So, you know, now is a really good time to go get an EV. You can still get on new ones. You can still get the $7,500 tax credit on a used EV. If the price is up to $25,000, you can get $4,000 off. There are income thresholds, which unfortunately missed it by that much. So couldn't get the $4,000 credit on the EV6.
But you're rich.
Hardly.
Flip side.
You can afford two dogs.
$4,000 on a used one. So if you can find, you know, something nice for under 25 grand, you can get an extra $4,000 off of that. So that's very helpful. But again, you got to do it and close the deal before September 30th of this year. So you got a little less than 3 months left.
Yeah. If you don't think you can afford like a new car, like you can get like some pretty screamingly still. I know. Mm-hmm. I think Volkswagen has like $200 a month or $110, something really crazy.
They all have really good lease.
Everyone
deals
has
right
like really good lease.
Everyone.
Deals. And then you
like almost whatever car you're looking for. If you haven't looked in a while for an EV, check it out right now, because you're probably going to be surprised at how good the deals are right now.
And I feel like they're going to ramp those up a bit right before.
I think they're going to try and move as many as they can in the next 3 months.
Yeah. So
because once that 3 months disappears, the bet would be that sales are going to go
somewhat.
We'll have to see because they went way up. They were saying that they spiked in May or something out of fear for that exact thing, and not knowing is it going to disappear tomorrow, is it going to disappear in May, June, July. So they said they went up, but now, and so they were not quite as high, and I wonder if they'll come back. It'll be interesting to see what it looks like by October. Yeah. What happened? Or actually November.
Yeah, well,
after everything's completely disappeared.
Yeah. You know, the problem is, you know, by June, a lot of inventory was starting to dry up, especially on stuff that's not built in the U.S. And so there was not as much availability of vehicles, which hurt some of the sales. You have to, you know, see what's out there. There's definitely still a lot of good deals out there to be had. If you can take advantage of the tax credits, do it now.
Yep.
Yeah. I think there's some pretty good deals out there right now. I think, ID4 is like super stupid cheap, like $120 or $110. Hyundai's are, let's see, $200 a month, like 180 to 230 to two, I'm sorry, 350 a month for the IONIQ 5. So there's some really great deals out there. The ID Buzz is still not on a nice lease deal yet. Not that I'm looking.
Not that you're interested at all.
Not that I'm interested. And you get that $7,500 on the hood with that. And at the end of your lease, if you're like, you know what, I want to buy this car, you already got your $7,500 off. So you just pay for the, now you just get a car loan and get your car and drive off into the sunset. And you know, again, long-term, an EV is cheaper than a gas car. I know it's more expensive up front, but at the end of the day, and also, you might, especially if you're able to charge at home, I mean, why even bother getting a gas car? But I get so irritated having to go put gas in the BRZ, just so angry. I'm like, because I'm so used to just like getting up. The IONIQ 5 has, you know, it's full of electrons, and I just drive it around and they plug it in.
Yeah, my wife is so happy knowing that she'll never have to get into the gas line at Costco again, you know, for cheap gas.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And we get free charging at EA with our car. We're part of the deal where we get free charging. It's not even worth it to me.
Really?
I just charge at home still. I'm just like, okay, so I can
unless go you're driving to LA or something.
If I'm driving to LA, it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I've driven to LA and Palm Springs and Bakersfield and, you know, all Southern California and back multiple times for free, essentially. You know, it's I'm probably going to go over my lease range numbers, but you know, the money I'm saving on fuel is amazing. But around here, like around home, and there's and it's not like there's no EA stations. I can't swing a bat without hitting one. I'm just like, go home and plug it in.
Well, the one of the things my wife is really excited about, you know, is preconditioning the car. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, up until now, you know, I mean, she had remote start on the Civic, and so in the wintertime, you know, when it was cold, if she needed to go somewhere, you know, she would open the garage door, you know, start up the car, get it warmed up, you know, heat up the cabin before getting in there and going off. Now, you know, the car's plugged in. You can just have the air conditioning, you know, turn on, you know, cool the car down before you go, you know, when it's 90 degrees and 90% humidity out like it is right now.
Like today. Ugh. Yeah, she's so like that today. Look.
Yeah, I was out this morning doing some things in the yard and I wasn't even doing anything strenuous. You know, I was out there for like 45 minutes really... and I came in and I was just drenched. You know,
it's the worst. This is the kind of weather for Michigan and New Hampshire. You get that hot, humid stuff. Yeah. It's just like, oh, forget it. I'm out.
But you know, when you can pre-cool the car while it's still plugged in, so you're not using any energy from your battery. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, the EV6 has heated and ventilated seats.
Oh,
and so ooh, when my wife turned on the ventilated seats for the first time, she said, oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
She liked that. So,
yeah, I love ventilated seats.
So, yeah, I mean, lots of advantages to an EV. And, you know, it can make different kinds of sounds. The EV6 is not as loud as the charger, but, you know, it still makes sounds, you know, so there's that.
Right. Robbie, are you torturing your cat? What are you doing to the poor cat right now?
He's just Roy. Roy, come here.
Oh my goodness. No, the poor cat sounds like you're strangling him in the background.
I'm not petting him. That's the problem.
Yeah. Oh, put him on
he doesn't want to be on my lap. He just wants to be a pet. He just wants to be seen. Now he's
listen to the poor kitty.
Now he's rubbing himself on my flip flops. Now he's smelling the dog. Now he's yelling at the dog because the dog's in the way for him getting come here. Poor Bowie.
Like literally in the background, you hear your cat sounding like being tortured.
Bowie alone. Bowie's not bothering you. The German Shepherd is being bullied by the cat.
Makes sense, Bowie. In the land of animals. That makes perfect sense.
I'm going to let him out. Maybe he'll leave.
Okay. All right. So we'll continue as he lets his cat out.
So, Nicole, how often do you rent cars?
Not a lot. On occasion, though, I do rent a car if I'm someplace that's out of the way. I do rent a car. Russ rents a lot of cars.
So when you rent a car, you know, do you always make sure to do a walk around before you drive off and make sure that, you know, there's no scratches or anything that any scratches or dents are properly recorded before you leave the rental lot?
Well, if it's a ginormous scratch or dent, yes, but I probably, as a result of the article we're about to discuss, will pay significantly more attention to how many dents and dings are in my vehicle.
How about you, Robbie? Do you rent cars very often?
Yeah, actually. And this is just a bad idea from a company that's already not doing great. That's my intro to this next segment.
Have you ever gotten dinged, charged for you know, some markings on the car that they claimed were not there when you left?
No, I'm a very good driver.
I've only ever had them. I parked a car and they came back and they called me because it was after hours. It's like, well, we need to assess the damage. I'm like, what damage? And apparently I drove through on a like 1,000-mile road trip some black, like some wet tar somewhere.
Oh, so there's little speckles of asphalt?
No, right. He actually says, like, you hit something. I'm like, hold on a second. Wiped it off. I'm like, no, I didn't. Like, I'm like, literally, he's going to charge me for damage. I'm like, I can just, like, make that, wipe that off of there, dude. So that's as close as it came. He's like, oh, it looked like damage. I'm like, it looks like tar. Anyway, that's as close as I've come as having the to wipe tar off the front bumper so they didn't try to charge me for denting the bumper.
I mean, I actually one time did have an issue when we were on a family vacation in Puerto Rico. I went to the grocery store one day to get some stuff. And when I came out, you know, somebody had rubbed against the front corner,
you know, on the bumper. The way you said it.
Some other car rubbed itself up against the Ford Explorer we had rented. And so the front bumper was kind of scuffed. There was no way I was getting around that one when I returned it. But fortunately, I had rented it on my Amex card and they provide some extra insurance on that. So I just put in the claim there, but, Hertz, Hertz is, trying to, address the problem of, car damage in their own way.
Ridiculous way. Let's just say it.
So, well, you know, the thing is, having talked to people at Hertz in the past, you know, at their busier places, like at airport locations, those locations, they turn cars in like 20 minutes when they come back. From the time they come in to the time they go back out with another customer, averages 20 minutes or less, usually, at their busy airport locations.
Wow.
And they're trying to speed that up even more. So they have installed... they're starting to install a new system that you drive through and it scans the car as you drive through and uses AI to detect any damage.
Who on the Hertz like executive team got scammed by somebody for this? Because when I drop off cars at the airport, a person comes over, they scan the car, they walk around the car to see if there's any damage. Mm-hmm. They say, leave the keys in the car, have a nice flight. And then I walk away. So there's someone already doing that job. So they still have to scan the car. They still have to give, tell you to put your keys in the blah, blah, blah. They walk around it. So now you've saved that person, 20 seconds of that walk around the car by spending God knows how much money for a giant lying machine.
Somebody must have figured out that the giant machine is somehow going to the machine cost us X, but we're going to make X squared in additional claims because we're going to catch more of the damage that the humans miss.
That's probably it.
That's why they figured out.
It's not so
out
much that,
it's
that they're going to save time, but they're going to catch stuff that the humans miss.
Exactly. We're going to, instead of sending it out with the same dented bumper three times, you're going to dent it and they're going to charge you.
You didn't catch it when you took off, when you left with it. It was already there. Right.
But the robot should have. But here's the problem: is that AI is not good. Here we go. That's it. Here's the problem.
Oh yeah, not arguing the problem of it. Just the theory. I can see how Hertz would say this sounds like a brilliant idea. It's just the people who know anything about AI who go wait. Not so brilliant.
It makes me not want to. I rent from Hertz a lot just because.
So does Russ. That's Russ's preferred thing. It's Hertz.
But now I'm like no.
I gotta let him know.
I rent for work, and so because it's work, we get a discount. And I think Hertz and Enterprise are the two. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'll just rent Enterprise. I'm like, good job, Hertz. I guess I don't know. Yeah,
So they're Hertz is partnering with a company called UVI. They're planning to have 100. They want to have 100 of these scanners at their airport locations by the end of this year. They have about 1,600 U.S. airport locations. We want to have 100 of them by the end of the year. The first of them have already been put in at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta Airport, that's a very busy airport.
It's very busy. Yeah,
yeah. So be careful if you're going to rent from Hertz, make sure that you. In fact, what you might want to do is, ask if you can run it through the scanner before you leave and make sure you.
That would be the best if you drove once on your way out and once on your way in or something and you could see.
Compare the difference.
I guess if you at least do a video walk around of your own car, right? Pop out your phone and do a little walk around.
The last time I rented a car when we were in Palm Springs earlier this year, that's what I did is I walked around the Polestar 2 and took a bunch of photos because there was a bunch of scuffs on that one. It did have some damage.
It looks like it does. You can do it before and after, in addition to doing the regular walk around. And then I'm reading the UVI, so it's like good for customers. I'm like, I don't know how that's true, but sure.
But you know,
if they were good for customers, it wouldn't make Hertz any money.
Exactly. Yeah. And because it's AI, you know, even if you drove it through multiple times, you wouldn't necessarily get the same results every time.
Every time. My drive it through again. Let's see what it says this time.
Yeah. AI is nothing if not inconsistent.
It's very good at not being good at its job.
Yeah.
If I had an employee that was as bad as AI, I would have asked that employee to leave.
All right. A couple more here. Polestar announced, and Volvo actually both announced this week, that the Polestar 7, which is a compact crossover, it's was originally scheduled for 2027. It's now coming in 2028. It's going to be built at Volvo's new factory in Slovakia, starting in 2028.
Slovakia.
It's probably going to be a while before we actually see what the Polestar 7 looks like. Coming in 2028.
That's a few years.
Hopefully, Polestar survives that long.
Do you think they will, or do you think Polestar's just not long for this world?
I don't know. I mean, their owners, Geely, have deep pockets. So, you know, they could be around for a long time. The question is, how patient is Geely? Their Polestar sales haven't been fantastic. So we'll see. All right. And then the Chevy Trax. If you're looking for something affordable, inexpensive, with a new car warranty, Trax, since the current generation Trax, the second generation, that's been, a top choice ever since it came out a couple of years ago. It's getting more expensive, for 2026, going up by as much as $1,100, depending on the trim level,
which is a lot of money, but especially for that low price vehicle. That's a really price sensitive consumer. Yeah. You know, you're not someone who's spending $75,000 on the car and you're like, well, what's an extra grand? If you're in a $20,000 car market, $1,000 is a lot. That can significantly change things, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
It's almost like they looked at the Maverick and said, you know what? Why don't we do that? I mean, that seemed to be working for Ford.
Well, and I'm sure, part of the reason for the price hike is, although GM will not acknowledge this, is tariffs.
Yeah, they got to get stuff.
The Trax is built in Korea, so.
Yeah.
That's going to impact things.
And then finally, we talked last week about Tesla's robo-taxi launch in Austin, and it's still going really well. The other day, a Tesla, one of the robo-taxi vehicles, came into contact with a parked car. It had just dropped off a passenger and it was maneuvering down an alleyway, which, maybe not the smartest thing to be doing. And it was a car parked there. And for some reason, the Tesla decided to turn towards the parked car. Didn't make any metal-to-metal contact.
The tire
that had turned and was pointing towards the car just came in contact, and it's not clear yet, at least from the initial reports, whether the car stopped on its own or whether the safety monitor in the car hit the stop button.
It was so weird when you watch the video too, because it's not like it was a tight. It's just like, it's one of those things, if you were watching a human do it, you'd be saying, what are you doing? Like there's nothing where you can say, there was something that was confusing, or there was a weird obstruction in the road or something. But it was like, this should make perfect sense. Why are you doing this? It was very strange.
Because it's a camera only system and it was dark.
Yeah. And super slow. It was like, change my mind. And still tapped it with
the
wheel.
I think people still think that cameras can see as well as humans, like the human eye, and they can't. That's I know people like, 4K, 8K, 16K, 7000K, whatever. They just can't.
They just can't.
They don't have as much dynamic range as the human eye.
Yeah.
And AI is not as good as the human brain at stuff like this.
Yeah, it's not. We see, because it looked, when you watch the video, you do watch it, and in your head, you're like, how, no human would be doing this. A human would be like, what? It just makes no sense. AI is brilliant, except when it's not.
Yeah, which it often is not.
It is. Yeah, it's and again, I'm none of this stuff is actual AI. AI is a marketing term. This is all just rules. If this is this, then do this. If this is this, then do this. It's
just more granular rules than we can write manually.
Yeah, that's pretty. It's not.
Yeah,
it's not artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's not actually a thinking machine.
Yeah, there is no such thing.
Yeah. Someday we'll have the thinking machines and they'll take over and it'll be great.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Then we'll have Skynet and everything will be, or if we're lucky, Murder Robot.
By the way, if you haven't been watching Murder Bot, excellent show.
Oh my gosh. I love that show. One more episode.
Yeah, I know. We were like, there's one more. We always like to wait a little while before we watch a show because we don't want to wait like week to week. And we thought, we're like, I guess we waited long enough. Nope.
Nope. We did the same thing. We just watched it this weekend. Such a good show.
The episodes are only like 23, 24 minutes long.
They're really short. They're and there's only nine.
Yeah, there's like sitcom. It's like sitcom length. So yeah. You're like watching it and then it's over. You're like, I want more Murderbot.
Yeah. Alexander Skarsgård is fantastic as Murderbot.
He's really good. Yep, as the murder bot. I still think of him as the vampire from True Blood. I never think of him like, the True Blood vampire's getting a little cranky. Okay.
Did you happen to watch What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, he has a cameo in the season finale. Or no, the series finale. That's just really, really good. And it's like 3 seconds of him, but it's really good.
Unfortunately, that last season was not great. The first 5 seasons were fantastic. That season 6 was
you're trying to wrap something up and it's always a little bit tough.
Yep. All right, let's answer some listener emails because we got a bunch of them this week. Starting off with Sean Whitehurst. Sean asks, in your review a few weeks ago of the Lincoln Navigator, you praised the sound system. Assuming you had perfect hearing, how do you take full advantage of these sound systems? CD slots are gone, right? Can Android Auto, Apple CarPlay support lossless? For GM EVs, what can Android Automotive support? Are the infotainment systems limiting yet? You're not going to get the full effect with any projection system because those are, I don't think even with the lossless, Apple Music lossless.
You need to be plugged in.
Yeah.
Bluetooth is never going to be as nice as, first of all, you need to be plugged in. Second of all, there's likely when they give us the cars to test them, they give us a USB stick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you said, because there's no CD players in most of these cars anymore. The way to do it is you're going to want to put lossless audio files on a USB thumb drive and then plug that in. That's the only way that you're going to really get the full effect.
Yep, that's it.
All right. Seth Golden asked or commented, interesting to hear the last podcast where you talked about seeing one or two Fisker Oceans, because over the last couple of months, they've been all over the roads of New York City. It turns out that a company purchased thousands of them at $13,000 each. And is now renting them to Uber drivers for $399 a month. It's a crazy experiment, as I'm sure it will be a challenge to keep this fleet on the road over time. But in the meantime, you see Oceans all over the place. I see several every day. Did you see any when you were in New York for the auto show, Nicole?
I'm trying to think. Maybe I saw one. I've seen so few of them out there. If I did see them in New York, I mean, I feel like I've seen all told and since they've come out and died maybe four ever.
But to what Seth says, during the bankruptcy process last year, as they were liquidating everything, there was a company that bought all the remaining inventory. There was a couple of thousand cars that they had left and they bought them up and they are renting them out to Uber and Lyft drivers in New York. if you're in the city, well, I'll be in the city in a couple of weeks for the Subaru event. I will definitely keep my eyes open and see if there's
there we go. And I'm going to have to pay attention to see how often I see him.
Yeah.
All over the place near my neighborhood. Just, I don't know. I live in the Bay Area. Everyone buys every EV. They're everywhere.
Well, the Bay Area is crazy.
EVs everywhere.
We're a crazy place. We love clean air. Crazy mofos.
You're insane.
We're insane. We've lost our minds.
David Levine said, I see a Fisker almost daily on my commute to work in New Jersey. Coincidence always astounds me. He was two cars ahead of me when your Fisker spotting was mentioned as he was listening to the show. This one has a cool plate, and he sent send in a picture. What was the plate on this one? I can't remember. Oh, can't read the plate.
It's very I can see the dashboard.
Yeah. I see the Fisker ahead of me. I can't read the plate. It's too blurry.
I cannot.
Also,
I cannot.
Yeah, we don't.
So David, if you're listening, let us know what exactly does the plate say, because we can't actually read it in the photo that you sent. Then Paul Smith Kitely, despite being old enough to know better, I find myself getting drawn into online arguments about the above subject.
Oh no!
What was the above subject?
It's probably maybe his subject line and his email.
Well, let me find that. Let's see, Paul Smith Kitely. Oh, some questions on AV and robo taxis. So,
robot taxi.
Yeah. Question one. I am of the opinion that Musk backed himself into a corner his pride won't let him get out of. When he started promising self-driving cars back in the early 1500s, LiDAR was very expensive. And being the type who doesn't like spending his own, he declared that he could make it work with just cameras. However, it is becoming rapidly apparent that A, he can't, and B, he needs to use LiDAR. Now it is cheaper. What do you think?
Yep. Just yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That would be a great idea.
Everything about this is correct. Yes, he backed himself to his corner. B, it's his pride. C, he needs LiDAR.
And
F, I don't know what letter I'm on anymore. Yeah, it is indeed cheaper than it used to
be. And the backing himself into a corner, you know, it's worse than just a matter of pride. It's also very expensive because, you know, he promised millions of customers that they would get full self-driving with just a camera system and sold, you know, FSD to many customers for, depending on when you bought it, as much as $15,000. I think currently it's about $7,000 or $8,000 if you buy one now. But you know, as much as $15,000, and he kind of doesn't have a choice, you know, at this point, because he promised something and took money for it. And you know, the only options are to either give the money back or retrofit the cars to deliver what he promised when he sold it to customers.
Is there a class action suit? Because I feel like if I were told that the thing I bought was going to be self-driving, it had all this, and then years later, he's like, nah, it doesn't do that. You got to buy this other thing, or you have to do this other thing. I feel like this is America, and we love to sue people. So there's got to be like a something.
You know, I know that there's challenges around suing Tesla because, you know, they put into all of their agreements, they put, you know, arbitration clauses in there, which makes it a lot harder to sue them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think should be illegal, but anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Arbitration should be illegal. Or at the very least, it should be optional.
Yeah.
It should not be the only option.
Yeah.
All right. And question two from Paul. Do you think that the mass public actually want to be auto-driven around in someone else's personal vehicle? Have you seen that insides of most cars? Is hitting self-drive really going to be a thing?
Hiring self-drive. Here's the deal. There are a lot of people who can't drive. I think self-driving, when it actually works, is great for last mile. I do not think it should definitely not replace public transportation. I don't see why we should not have self-driving buses, because there are a lot of, you know, there's accessibility issues with buses that require a bus driver to help and require a bus driver to make, you know, important decisions and require a bus driver to sort of be the bus driver from when you were a little kid telling everyone to settle the F down when you're acting crazy. But I do, there's also a lot of like tiny little towns that don't have something. And for them, there's like a thing called like Dial-A-Ride. My mom used Dial-A-Ride for years in my tiny little town because there's only like 5,000 people in my town. It didn't make any sense to have a you know, a whole bus system outside of school buses. And even then they didn't really I had to walk to school because they're like, yeah, if you live in town, you don't get the ride to school bus.
And
wow.
And you know, I think you know, I don't think robo-taxis should be replacing public transit, because you know, public transit is far and away the most efficient way to move lots of people around a city.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know, putting 40 or 50 people on a bus, way more efficient than putting 40 people into 40 robo-taxis.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that said, I think that there is also a place for automated shuttles, like, you know, 10, you know, 8 to 12 passenger shuttles to augment the public transit that we have, you know, because the problem is, you know, while a 40 passenger bus is very efficient if it has, you know, 30 or 40 passengers on it, there's a lot of routes, a lot of parts of a city where you're not necessarily going to be able to fill such a large vehicle. And so what you need, you know, to get people to use public transit more is you need higher frequency and service, more service to more areas. To do that, you need more vehicles. You need more drivers, you know, and you need more smaller vehicles. Well, hiring people to be bus drivers is really hard. Not just here, but also in Europe and other places. When I was in Korea last time, you know, the average age of bus drivers in Seoul is like 62 or 63. In Europe, it's like low 50s. And it's at least that here in the US. And if we want to put more vehicles and have higher frequency of service, we need to incorporate automation and have like these smaller shuttles to provide more service into more areas so that people can get to the mainline routes. So you still have buses and subways and trains for the heaviest traveled routes, and then have these smaller shuttles that can feed into those and, you know, provide more efficient service, provide more service to more people. I think that's actually a better use case for automated driving than robo-taxis.
Like a spoken hub system.
Yeah, so exactly.
Like, you know, you're all going to say that, like here in the Bay, we have BART. If you live out in the suburbs or pretty far out, some of the BART stations are out in the suburbs. If you don't have a robust bus system to get you there, or if you do have a bus system, but it can't like go everywhere because suburbia is sprawl. Mm-hmm. There are some people who are a little further out. And so if you have a, you know, for those routes where only, you know, 20 people live on, you can use that to get them to the BART station or to a main bus line. And so it's just filling in the gaps.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. To take care of the transit deserts, as they say.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually a better thing. Yeah. As to the question of, you know, do the public actually want to be auto driven around? That's still
that's
a big question. You know, a recent survey, the latest survey from AAA on this topic said less than 20% of Americans wanted to ride in automated vehicles. That said, you know, 99% of Americans have never been near an automated vehicle. They've never experienced it. You know, those that have used like Waymo robo taxis, in San Francisco, LA, Phoenix, Austin, they tend to really like them. They actually prefer riding around in a vehicle without a driver most of the time, because it's more consistent. They don't have to worry about somebody wanting to have a conversation when they're not in the mood for one, you know.
What is it that you can do? Isn't it Uber where you can get like request the silent ride?
Yes, I think so.
Like,
yeah.
I see. Okay, so to be honest, I've always been I have social anxiety, but I taught myself in order to do this job, I taught myself to talk to people, and I like to write about things and people are a great source. So I actually talk to everyone, even though it's like counterintuitive to how I am naturally.
Yeah. I hear you. I feel the same way. And then finally, question three from Paul. What do you think of Zooks? Is it truly the urban transport pod for the masses? I think it could be. You know, the question is, you know, is Zooks' system, their automated driving system, working as well as it needs to? Yeah, I think the vehicle is really interesting.
Yeah, I think the vehicle's
super cool.
I think the vehicle is like Zooks and Zooks. I've been in a Zooks, like in a parking lot, mm-hmm. and I was invited to ride around in one in Las Vegas. And unfortunately,
what'd you think?
I didn't have a chance to make it. I was I had another big review interview I had to do, and it's Las Vegas. It was just impossible. Like they were like off the strip, like off somewhere. And when that happens at CES, it becomes incredibly difficult to get to this. So if you're a company and you want to you want reporters to come cover you, you got to figure out a system to like get those people there. Because if it's you're like, hey, you want to do a ride along or do you want to meet with us or you want to do something? Okay, cool. All right. By the way, we're way the F over here.
Yeah.
Good luck trying to get there. Instead, you should be like, we're going to have a car come pick you up. Because that's the only way you're going to guarantee you're going to get.
Because otherwise, you fight for everything at CES. Yeah. It's too much of a pain.
And Zooks just, they opened robo taxi production in the East Bay, which, if you're building things, that's great because people get jobs. So that's nice. But, I think I like the form factor. Nice big open door. You get in. It's essentially like getting into a subway car, except smaller.
Yeah.
Just the big doors.
And that's the way, these vehicles should be is, kind of the carriage seating open in the middle. That's what Cruise was doing with the Origin. I think that form factor is the right kind of form factor, easy to get in and out. Also a lot easier to adapt for wheelchairs, automatic wheelchair ramps, that emerge when needed, and then a clamping system for the chair. I think that's a really good solution.
Yes. Because you have to think if you're not thinking about accessibility when you're building these vehicles, you're failing as far as I'm concerned.
All right. David Sadel. Hopefully I'm pronouncing your name right, David. Let me know if I haven't. Enjoyed your review of the 2025 Mini Countryman All-4 SE. I ordered mine in August of 2024, and it was delivered in November. My driving range on 100% charge is 248 miles. Most of my driving is local, and I charge the Mini at home with a 240-volt Autel charger, just like the one I have. My only complaint about the round infotainment OLED screen is that the clock is in small text at the bottom of the screen. That is a very good point. Yeah. This makes it difficult to get the time while driving without taking your eyes off the road. Regarding the temperature controls on the infotainment screen, they can easily change the temperature settings by using the Hey Mini voice control. I didn't get a chance to do that because I tried it, but you have to set up an account on there and, set it all up, and I wasn't able to do that on the press loaner. I've attached a picture of my Mini in British Racing green with a white top.
Nice. And
yeah, it is a great combination. It looks really sharp. That British Racing green is a great color, and with the white top, I think it looks really cool. And the build sheet that shows it cost $50,295, which includes shipping from Germany. And I think they, the destination charge was $995. So,
all the way from Germany, only $995. I have been led to believe that.
Whereas that Dodge Charger Daytona that I was driving came all the way from Windsor, Ontario, about 45 minutes away from me for $2,000.
Such a long, 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 long drive.
Anyway, keep up the great work. Always enjoy listening to the show. And then finally, Mark Lohndorf. I just listened to Robbie's X5 review. My 2025 X5 M60i is my first car without a conventional shifter knob. It has a lever instead. Is this the route that most manufacturers are headed? I miss having that shifter to rest my hand on. It also feels counterintuitive to move the lever forward to go in reverse and backwards to move forward. Other than that,
it's weird. It is weird. It takes a little. I'm like, what am I doing? What? Okay, push it, and it's this little EDB thing.
Yeah, Because you know it's an electronic switch.
It could be anything. It could be a dial, a shifter, a button, a bird. I don't know.
Yeah, like on the EV6, you know, it's a rotary dial. And you twist it to the left to go in reverse, twist it to the right to go into drive, and then press the park button in the middle of it to park it.
Like the F-150 Lightning doesn't need that giant shifter, but people like it. That's it. That's the only reason it's there.
GM's going to column shift on all of their cars now.
I like the column shift on our Ioniq 5. Yeah. I like the column shift. I like it on the Mercedes because you're like, oh, okay, it's like the 70s.
Yeah.
We're doing column shifting again. All right. This at least makes sense in my little brain.
Except you don't have to go through multiple notches now because it's still an electronic switch. So it's just more like a turn signal now, you know, up for drive, up for reverse.
Yeah. Which is just like the column.
Yeah.
And a click.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for writing in keep sending us emails. We'd love to answer the questions or listen to your comments. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menard. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce ready-to-spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big
money at Menards. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.